Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, my God!
It's lost under his feet, and it's come for Lamella!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Skipjack, and we've got everyone here to talk about a less-than-stellar week in Tottenham Hotspur football. Last week, when you joined us, we were all very hopeful that stealing points from West Ham at the death might somehow, some way, spur this team on. Get it? See what I did there? Move Tottenham into a better place. Alas, that did not seem to happen. Tottenham got eliminated from the Champions League this week, losing to Monaco in Monaco. And then we lost to Chelsea at Chelsea. Let's go around the horn and introduce everyone to our regular panelists to talk about these wonderful fixtures. First up, we have our sidekick, someone who is just available to talk about every Spurs game without question. That is Ben Daniels. Ben, I don't know. Is there anything else you'd rather talk about than Spurs this week?
Nope, nothing.
just
liar. It was a great performance. The lads fought till the end. You know, what else can you want?
Did they get stuck in?
They got stuck in.
They got stuck in something, all right. Next up, we have the veteran of our podcast. We have Brian. Brian, how did you handle this week in Spurs football?
Well, I did not spend it watching Gilmore Girls, that's for sure. I don't know. It was fine.
Man, this is going to be a long one, guys.
There are a lot of problems with the revival of Gilmore Girls, but I think fine is a pretty good way to put it. You know, it was nice to see your old friends back, but...
Michael, do you think that Spurs' performance... I should introduce you, Mike. We have our evil numbers wizard, Michael Cayley, that of lots of various, much more prestigious publications than the rest of us have ever worked for. Michael, how would you compare Rory's character arc to Spurs' performance against Monaco?
Yeah, I think this is actually a really good comparison here, because when you look at Rory's arc and the ways in which she never confronts sort of her privilege, the way in which she seems to be failing at her job for reasons that are her fault and falls upward nonetheless, and you look back at the show as it over its seven seasons, and the problems are there. It's not like this was just new in the revival. The way that the show tried to deal with class and never could do so successfully has been true of Gilmore Girls the whole way around. And you look at Spurs get stomped by Monaco, and you start worrying about how good this team, whether this team has been all that good all season long.
Very good comparison.
I literally can't argue with a word of that.
Well, that's because you always agree with Michael, Ben, so...
Good analogy.
So yes, let's talk about these terrible games. Feel free to work in whatever binge watching analogies are applicable after this Thanksgiving week, because God knows we're gonna have to get through this somehow, some way. Brian, I mean, this performance against Monaco was not what you would want to see out of this team. I mean, all the results sort of laid up the way we would want them to. I think if we'd beaten Monaco, we still would have had a fairly reasonable chance to top the group. Monaco, I think they played well, but I think it's not... I think football fans and Spurs fans in particular can be a little entitled sometimes in terms of what they expect from their team. But I think we should certainly expect Spurs to play better than we did against Monaco this week. I mean, what are your takeaways from this game?
It was a really stupid game, and it just didn't look like we were anywhere close to in sync defensively. The Dyer-Vimmer combination at the back was a disaster. And, I mean, the defending on all the goals was not good, and I mean, I don't – it just – it was not the kind of cohesive performance that you expected from a team with its back against the wall, needing three points to qualify for the next round. I mean, it just looked like we kind of mailed it in.
I mean, Michael, how much of this, I think we've seen some quarters blame this on Spurs' injury load right now, which certainly isn't nothing, but is that fair or should we still have looked better than we did?
I mean, there's a couple of things. I mean, I think that if you look at, you know, if we want to go back to sort of like whether Spurs are good, you know, if you look at the first five matches of the season, which is the only time all season that we had Kane and Alderweireld healthy at the same time, there's nothing wrong with that start of the season. You know, away draw to Everton where we played them about even, it's fine. We solidly beat Crystal Palace and Stoke City and Sunderland, and we didn't do great against Liverpool, but Liverpool have been, in context of their whole season, you know, playing Liverpool pretty close to a draw and getting the draw isn't horrible. So
but we,
you know,
also lost Walker in that game fairly early too. So that, yep, that's a bit of a miss. That's a bit of a weird game as well.
Yeah. Yep. Although, I mean, and now you're starting to like we need every player to be. I mean, the worry is I think the worry is less how good are Spurs when everyone is healthy. I think Spurs are very good when everyone is healthy.
Yes.
It's, do we need every single one of those players to be healthy to be good?
Well, in that case, I was referring more to the way Walker had to leave 20 minutes into the match. But you're absolutely right. But I mean, how does this inform the team? Because is it just those two key players not being in sync? Is it because we really looked out of it against Monaco?
I mean, there's a couple of things. I mean, one for me is, so I think there's sort of two things here. One is the sort of the problem of our Vincent Janssen, which is that we bought him to be a backup to Harry Kane right away, and he is not ready for that role. And that's a big loss. The other thing is that Toby Alderweireld is, we depended on him to make our weird midfield work because we don't really have a passer in midfield, and his distribution, his diagonals out of the back, allowed us to get the most out of our midfielders without having a normal passer in there. And so not having him, suddenly we really struggle advancing the ball. And then against Monaco, that was combined with Mauricio Pochettino deciding to like try out a new formation, which I don't even know what it was.
It was bad.
And our players didn't know how to press in it. And Monaco came out and clearly planned on using, you know, a 4-4-2 with wingers where you get the ball wide really early and you can get around our press. And especially with our players not really knowing how to play against each other, we were completely unable to press Monaco. They were able to get the ball wide and get penetration at will. That was the worst Spurs have played all season, so, I'd say by a pretty good amount.
So let me follow up on that, because Pochettino chose an interesting way to line up against them. And we've seen him sort of choose interesting ways to line up against specific teams, seemingly out of nowhere, at least once or twice this year, where it's had some success with Arsenal and with City in particular. But this was a case where it really didn't work. Are you concerned about Pochettino's ability as a manager in game?
I mean, this was a pregame choice. I mean, I think we've seen for a while that we don't count on Pochettino getting that tactical tweak that really turns a game around. That's not what he's there for. But he's clearly trying stuff, trying to figure out new things that might work against Chelsea, which, you know, we lost and that sucks. But I thought it was a fine performance for a match at Stamford Bridge against a very, very good team. And we went back to a pressing 4-2-3-1, and we looked like we knew what we're doing again.
Yeah, I think the Chelsea performance is much oddly. I mean, I feel like on paper, if you told me about these two results, I probably would have thought I'd be more upset about the Chelsea result. But I was much more disturbed by the Monaco result, just because of. I mean, you know, you hear all the things people talking about Spursy, but you know, it just set up so well for us to like finally get our act together in the Champions League. And you know, I know Monaco. I'm not trying to dismiss Monaco here, but like we should at least be able to give them a game. Like at a bare minimum, we should be able to trade blows with them, and we just weren't able to do it. And it was really, I mean, it was really frustrating. I mean, Brian, I mean, you watch much more of Ligue 1 than any of us do. Is that unfair in terms of how I'm assessing Monaco right here?
I think it's unfair in the context of, like, this season's version of Monaco, who are actually quite good. But, I mean, if you're looking at it from a larger Spurs perspective, where last year we thrashed Monaco pretty handily in the Europa League, and then, you know, we played them kind of closely in the first match at Wembley. They got a couple of, or at least one fortunate goal anyway, and both were kind of against the run of play. So you would have thought that we could at least give them a game, but in short, basically, the answer to your question is no. This isn't expected from this Monaco team. They're actually very, very good. But in the context of what we expect from Spurs, this is simply isn't good enough.
Yes.
I mean, the thing about Spurs, so to speak to Pochettino and the formation situation that Michael brought up, you know, we have had, obviously, a lot of injuries, and those have necessitated a tactical reshuffle away from our normal 4-2-3-1. Because of the personnel that we have. But the problem is when you have a team like Spurs that is so system-oriented, like the reason we're good is because of the way we play in that 4-2-3-1. Like so much of our ability to beat teams depends on the way that that structure presses and defends and creates chances through the press. And so when you move away from that formation, you know, you lose that kind of structure that has allowed us to be good. And I give him credit for moving away and trying new things to accommodate the needs of the players that are at his disposal. But it's hard to kind of replicate that same systemic ability when you're not playing the same system. And so, you know, on the one hand, I give credit to Pochettino for trying something different to make sense of the pieces that he has to assemble them into some kind of coherent puzzle. But against Monaco, you know, the way he set up was easily and obviously defeated by Monaco doubling up down the wings. And there was no attempt from Pochettino in a reasonable way to adjust tactically in the middle of the game to that new, you know, tactical need. And so while it's hard to come up with a new formation and get it to work, you know, when the formation you've come up with isn't working anyway, like you might as well at least say, well, defend the areas that need defending and hope it's better. I don't know. I think Pochettino, again, is just limited by his inability to kind of manage in the moment, which when we have all of our players, it doesn't really matter because it's good. And it's, you know, when we can't do that is when problems sort of rear their head.
I guess it just blows my mind that he can suss out a alternate strategy that can, you know, flummox Pep Guardiola or Arsene Wenger. But, and again, I understand that Monaco is not a bad team. I understand that. But that we can't sort of suss something out that can, you know, beat this, you know, sort of like above average French team. It's just, I guess it's just, you know, considering what we saw last year, it's disappointing.
Yeah, to put it in kind of, I mean, Monaco have been good in Ligue 1, they've been good in the Champions League. But are they like we clearly played better against Chelsea than we did against Monaco?
Yes.
And I don't think anyone is going to be saying that Monaco are clearly better than Chelsea. Like we played poorly.
Exactly, and that's I don't know if just to chalk it up to a single game or what's going on in Europe. I mean, we've heard okay. So let's get into this. Like we've heard complaints from some players, much to their chagrin, that Wembley has not helped us out. I mean, obviously that had no effect on the game we saw this past week. But, I mean, Ben, I'll start with you. Do you think the Wembley pitch has had an effect on how Spurs have played in the Champions League this year? I know that there's some quotes we can all dig up where Arsene Wenger talks about the years they had to play at Wembley when they were building the Emirates as a nightmare. I mean, do you think that is part of the reason? Do you think it's just we're stretched thin this year? Is Pochettino, I mean, I know some Spurs fans complain that Pochettino doesn't care about Europe, which I don't think is true. But, I mean, what do you think's up with us in Europe this year?
I mean, you know, I think the Wembley issue is perfectly reasonable to add to the laundry list of issues that we have right now. It is not an easy thing to manage at the best of times, but it's a thing we have to learn to manage because we're going to be playing an entire season there.
Well, will that be as much of a problem when every single game we have is there as opposed to
I don't know, but like the idea that like we should stop playing at Wembley, like Sissoko suggested, is just like, well, that's not an option. We got to learn it sooner or later. So, you know, a dead rubber Champions League tie is as good an opportunity as any, you know, to give it a shot. But like you said, you know, it didn't matter for the Monaco game. We were not at Wembley, so
maybe Monaco has a really big pitch.
I mean, pitches come in all shapes and sizes, and we have to play on big pitches or bigger pitches than White Hart Lane almost every week. So, you know, at some point, like, that excuse is not really a viable excuse. It's just the nature of how the game works.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. So, let's look back. I mean, we've got one more game left in the Champions League. It doesn't really matter at all. I'd be shocked if we're playing anyone worth a damn in that game. I mean, Ben, you're probably the longest. You and Brian are the longest tenured Spurs fans on this podcast. I mean, how disappointing was this year's Champions League campaign? Is this hopefully just part of the growing pains you can expect out of this team moving forward, learning to adjust to Europe? Maybe hopefully once we have a more like reasonable pitch situation that you won't run into some of those issues, or is this really a severe letdown from what you'd expect out of the Spurs team after last year?
I mean, it's absolutely a letdown. I mean, you can look at, you know, some of those reasons and try to, like, take comfort from them and, you know, rationalize why it wasn't so bad. But, like, we're not in the Champions League often enough that we can just treat one the way we treated this one, you know? I mean, the last time we were in the Champions League, the only time we were in the Champions League, I mean, that was just, you know, an unbelievable experience where, you know, we beat the shit out of the reigning European champions. We beat Milan at the San Siro, like, you know, that was like the kind of experience that you qualify for the Champions League to have. And for us to go out so toothlessly against a group that everybody thought was fairly soft going into it.
Especially, you know, when they had a chance to, like, I mean, we could be sitting here today talking about how Spurs could top their group next week.
Right. I mean, you know, meanwhile, you know, Bayer Leverkusen have drawn every game except for beating us. You know, it's like, this group was there for us to come out of. Like, that wasn't an impossible task, but we never showed up, you know, the way we did the last time out. So, you know, we can say, well, this is just a link in the chain, a step towards greater things, but who knows when the next time we're going to be in the Champions League is. You know, I mean, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, it could be never, you know? So for this to be
feeling our really confident about next year, it seems.
No, it's not about like confidence. It's just the reality is there are six big teams in England and we are the sixth biggest. It's hard to get in the Champions League. So, you know, I don't think we should be taking these experiences lightly, because that's what you play for, is the chance to go out there and compete with the best and, you know, give a shit.
Well put.
So in terms of the last game, you know, I think it's really tempting to say, fuck it. But, you know, winning the Europa League is a road back into the Champions League. And, you know, the field isn't that strong. We have an opportunity. You know, it's going to be hard to finish in the top four this season. Like, closing off another road to get back into the Champions League is not something we should do lightly.
The thing about that, though, is, like, you know, this team hasn't displayed any sort of ability to really take hold of knockout competitions. Like, our Europa League campaign last year was not exactly filled with the most convincing of displays. And
I mean, like, that's how you learn, right? By doing it and trying. Like, we can't just write off knockout competitions forever because
I'm not suggesting that we write them off forever. I'm just saying that, like, perhaps in the context of this year, with us competing against six big teams for Champions League space, perhaps it is beneficial to us to simply crash out of the Europa League or to not even qualify for it at all, which I don't think is possible.
The Europa League is a weird beast
because if we get in it, I guarantee you, like if we get into the semifinals, that'll be exciting. But until then, it's just a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's kind of a slog. But you know what? I like watching Spurs matches, and the more Spurs matches, that's good. And the reality of competing against a lot of teams for the Champions League, that's always going to be the case. Like, and having to compete in Europe at the same time is always going to be the case, or should always be the case for Spurs. So, you know, you look at Man City the first few times they were in the Champions League and they embarrassed themselves year after year. You know, but like, you kind of just got to fight through that. You can't just say we're going to phone it in this year and hope next year's better. Like, that's how you get better.
One would hope. I don't know. I mean, Michael, what is your big takeaway from Spurs coming out of the Champions League this year?
Yeah, we ran into injuries and had bad subs at a point where it was really, really important that we either didn't have injuries or had good subs. And that sucks.
It was not great.
Meanwhile, Leicester's going to get relegated and win the Champions League. So.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be really fun. I'm not looking forward to that. I don't know. Like, part of what I would enjoy watching them get relegated, but God damn it.
They're not.
Stop it. Don't take this away from me, Michael. Don't take this away from me. I know they're about to win seven in a row. So, moving on, Spurs played a pretty good game. I think, I don't know, like, there was a weird sort of half of Spurs fandom seemed to be melting down over it, and half of Spurs fandom seemed to be very at peace with it. Spurs played a decently respectable match against Chelsea where it just sort of didn't go our way. I know, for me, considering we started that match with Kevin Vimmer at left back, and we will talk about that more in a minute, that ended up a lot better than I thought it would. But obviously, in a game where you're leading Chelsea, you would have liked to have come away with more than that. Ben, how'd you feel about that performance? Were you feeling, was it reassuring in some way? Was it just more of the same disappointment from earlier in the week? Were you ignoring it for tactical reasons like Mauricio Pochettino does with Moussa Sissoko?
I mean, I was much more pissed about the result than the performance. I thought we played incredibly well. You know, the first half in particular, we were clearly the better side. And we kind of got sucker punched at the end with a, you know, really good goal that, kind of, there was nothing we could do about it.
Well, and then we gave up the winner on a goal that kind of happens when you have to start Kevin Vimmer at left back. I mean,
yeah, well, we can go into
exactly
how.
Do we have to start him at left back?
Yeah, well, that is a good point in and of itself.
So yeah, there is that debate. But I mean, even before we move on to that, like, even after, you know, going down, like, we fought, we played, we created, you know, we didn't create a ton, they didn't create a ton. You know, it wasn't like we got our asses kicked.
Well, that was the thing. We're playing a really good team. Yeah,
we haven't beaten Chelsea at Stamford Bridge since 1990. Like, you know, we've always had trouble there. Chelsea's a very good team. I don't know. Like, this is not the game to melt down over for me.
You're right.
Like, I would much more pissed about, like, Bournemouth or West Brom or something like that than I am about losing to a really good Chelsea side.
I think you're right, but this game also sort of exemplifies, and it's maybe not the best game to pick out to talk about it, but, I mean, we have to podcast about it, so what the hell. I mean, it exemplified something that sort of frustrated me about this team this year, especially towards the end, like you were talking about, Ben. I mean, we were looking, I don't want to say dangerous, but we were threatening Chelsea, but we never seemed to be able to put it all together and get good shots on goal with any sort of regularity, or, you know, really put Courtois under some serious pressure. I mean, Brian, is there something just missing out of our attack? Like, am I just holding Spurs to an unreasonable standard? Is Chelsea just that good? I mean, what's going on there?
I mean, I think you're right that there is something missing. I'm kind of in the same boat as you, is I don't know what it is. I think a lot of it has to do with
Eric Lamella, obviously.
Well, it might be.
Yeah, it could be Eric Lamella, but I think a lot of it also has to do with what Michael mentioned earlier about, you know, the absence of Toby Alderweireld, who plays those long diagonal balls to skip over the midfield, because we don't have that midfield passer. And now that we don't have somebody doing that, our attack kind of seems to get bogged down and stagnate a little. I mean, I think that's always kind of been our problem since we've lost, you know, Michael Carrick and Luka Modric. we don't have a passer in midfield. And Pochettino's system is such that we don't really need that all the time. But against teams that are tactically astute and can play, you know, very good compact football, our absence of a passer is felt really, really keenly. And this was probably one of those games where you needed someone to be a little bit more creative from deeper positions.
I see. I didn't really feel like the deeper positions was the problem. I thought we mostly won the midfield battle. You know, Dembele single-handedly fought Kante and Matic, and mostly won. Our problems seemed to come further up the pitch. I mean, Heung-min's son had just an appalling performance. You know, his touch was atrocious. You know, he couldn't settle the ball. He couldn't do anything with the ball. Dele Alli was completely anonymous. You know, I think that's where the attack broke down, was further forward. When we got Kane involved, that, like, that was good. And I thought the midfield and defense were mostly good. I felt like, again, it's that attacking band that we haven't been able to put out one that works without Eric Lamella.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem with, you know, an attacking band that includes both Dele Alli and Heung-min Son, in that they are both very much kind of goal-scoring attacking midfielders. And while they are good at doing some other things, creating is not exactly what they do best. And Eric Lamella definitely does a good job of creating chances for our attack, whether that's through, you know, playing like a madman and elbowing people in the face and taking the ball from them, or slide tackling goalkeepers, or just, you know, actually playing good creative passes to unpick defenses. I think yeah, he's a huge part of what we're missing.
Michael, is Moussa Sissoko the solution here?
I would like to say I told you so a little about that.
Yeah, no, you are entitled to. I think so. After this game, Mauricio Pochettino said that Moussa Sissoko was left out of the match, of the 18 players eligible for this match, due to tactical considerations. I mean, I would hope that Jose Mourinho sent him a bottle of wine, like, you know, as one shade thrower appreciating the work of another. Because that was some fine bus throwing a player under the bus right there. That was, I'm not sure he comes back from that. That's pretty bad. I mean, he can, obviously, but
I mean, he has to. We paid £30 million for him.
I don't know about that. I mean,
Pochettino's quotes out of the game, I mean, he was saying, you know, a price tag is irrelevant. It's about, you know, application and training and whatever. And if he's not doing the job, he's not going to play. And I think Sissoko is definitely at a place where he needs to show he's capable of a lot more before he deserves to be included in the squad, even over guys like Kieran Trippier.
Our other favorite player on this podcast.
Yeah. Let's go. Can we go back to the left back thing now?
Yeah, let's talk about that, Michael. Let's break that down a little bit. Was Kevin Vimmer at fault for the second goal, Chelsea's second goal?
Well, sort of. The more I watched that goal a lot, not really sure why we all started doing it.
Well, you spend a lot of your time since the election making yourself feel good online, so why not?
Exactly. You can like find the clip of it online or whatever, but like Vertonghen signals to Vimmer to pick up, Pedro as he's making a run. And so Vimmer does and continues tracking him across the 18-yard box. And so what I thought when I saw it happen was that obviously he's got to hand it off to Vertonghen. I think that like a more natural left back is going to recognize immediately where he is and look for opportunities to hand that man off, to not end up getting sucked all the way across the field. But it wouldn't have been super easy to do because Spurs in that attack never stopped the ball. And because Vertonghen didn't pick up, Pedro, that means that he was free and Eric Dier was free. One of them has to get on Costa and stop the ball, and they don't. And so because Costa gets the byline, is, I think, a bigger issue than that Vimmer got sucked out of his position.
I mean, in our right back zone, the attack develops through Eden Hazard and Diego Costa. And we have Dembele, Dyer, Vertonghen, and loosely Wanyama all in that zone, you know, who are able to cover those two guys. And, you know, the four of them lose. So when those four guys can't, you know, at least force that attack to check back, you know, there was just never an opportunity for Vimmer to get back into his position. You know, I think a lot of people also were wondering, like, where was Heung-min's son? Why wasn't he covering back on Moses, since as the wing back, that's nominally his man to mark. And one of the things that was kind of a feature of having Kevin Vimmer at left back meant that the fullback and the winger weren't really supporting themselves, each other, in the normal way you would expect. You know, we weren't asking Kevin Vimmer to get high up the pitch to support Heung-min's son, because he was never going to be able to run back and play defense. So they ended up playing very disconnected from each other, where Vimmer stayed back in a dedicated left back zone and Son stayed high up in a, you know, left forward role. So there wasn't really the expectation for Son to be providing cover in that area, especially not in, you know, the circumstances where we lose the ball in transition and, you know, he's not near, you know, the area to be part of our defensive transition. If I have to pick one person to blame, I think the biggest fault for me is with Eric Dyer. Because like Michael said, I mean, he has an opportunity to step on Costa for like 30 yards. And he just keeps checking off of him and, you know, stepping back while like directing Dembele to take the ball, who Dembele is chasing after having gotten bypassed by Hazard earlier in the play. And Diego Costa just has free run of our right side of the pitch. And without Eric Dyer ever making a challenge, you know, the attack developed the way it did. And the fact that Dyer had Vertonghen in reserve behind him, who was free to not mark Pedro because of Vimmer, you know, it was pretty risk-free for Dyer to commit to a challenge, or at least to kind of body up on him and make him work for it. So that, to me, is the biggest failure in a sort of cascade of failures that happened. But ultimately, the whole system kind of broke down.
I mean, look, as much as I appreciate you guys' well-reasoned tactical analysis of that, I think we're ignoring the fact that Vimmer was required to play left back at all, and why that is a failing of the team and the squad. Now, certainly the fact that Ben Davies is injured and Danny Rose suspended is unavoidable. But, I mean, we loaned out Nabil Bentaleb, who could have played left back.
All right.
Hold on. I'm going to bring it back. We avoided playing Jan Vertonghen at left back to either nominally keep him happy, or because Vimmer and Dyer looked so horrible against Monaco. And we didn't play one of our other fullbacks out of position. Like, we didn't play Trippier at left back. Kyle Walker-Peters, I think, is probably a left back, could have played there. What's his name? Walks has played some left back. I cannot be convinced that there was not some other better option than playing Vimmer there in that game. Like, even somebody who is just nominally a fullback, even if it's a right back, I would have much rather had somebody like that there, because I didn't see that Vimmer offered us anything really in terms of the shape of the team and defensively or in attack. And we spent much more time covering for him and his deficiencies by doing some of the things that Ben and Michael mentioned, with covering him with Son and that sort of stuff, that a regular fullback just would have helped.
I mean, I think Vimmer was much better than any of us would have guessed going into this match, but it feels
Vimmer's
like
last appearance at left back was on international duty against Ireland, where he got embarrassed.
Yeah,
by
and
Ireland.
Chelsea,
like, that's not even a real team.
And he got embarrassed like what, once? Like, I mean, probably more than that if we go back and look at it. But my point is, it went better than I think any of us would have guessed. At the same time, this was not ideal, and I feel like it's this game of musical chairs that is like, it started with our refusal to buy like an actual right center back, and apparently our transfer policy is being run by, like, you know, a U.S. men's national team fanboy who's just, you know, likes Carter Vickers so much that we don't want to get someone that we can actually play there this year. So instead, we're pulling Eric Dyer out of position, which means, you know, we can't play Kevin Vimmer there, and we can't, you know, it's just, it becomes this, like, set of dominoes that just keeps hurting us in different areas, and hopefully we'll get healthy enough. Like Brian said, like, Davies got hurt, which is really what screwed us up badly this game. But, you know, that's what happens with injuries. You got to be sort of ready for that. And I don't know. It's just frustrating that we're even in that situation in the first place.
I think the large majority of Premier League teams are going to have a problem when both of their left backs are hurt. I think there are problems with this, with our recruitment, but not having a good third left back strikes me as a pretty minor one.
That's probably.
I mean, the problem isn't that we don't have a good third left back. The problem is that we don't have a good third center back, because Vertonghen is a fine third left back, but the fact that we can't move him out of center back.
Well, we have a good fine third center back. That is a problem. It's that we don't have a fine third center back that we're willing to play at right on the right side of the pitch.
I mean, Dyer and Vimmer are both guys that should not be playing center back for this team, probably ever. Neither of them are very good at it. So, you know, we have a situation that we can't adjust when we have these injury problems. You know, as terrible as they are, you know, Man U finds, you know, ways to make Marcus Rojo and Daley Blind work in weird defensive positions in a way that, like, come on, those guys suck. Like, that shouldn't be beyond us to have at least the equivalent of Marcus Rojo at left back. Marco? I don't know, but I don't know what his name is.
I don't know. It's frustrating, and it's frustrating that we're talking about this considering that, I mean, it's not in that they gave up a goal mostly because of our fucked up defensive shape, but it's still like we played way better than we should have given the shape we trotted out there on Sunday and or Saturday, whatever the hell we played them. I don't know. Like you said, like Danny Rose is back from suspension. Ben Davies is almost healthy. Hopefully this particular issue is in our rear view, but I don't know. It's like
Gerald will still be out against, was it Swansea?
I think he'll be back for Swansea, is it, won't he?
Or no, I think they just said he's in training but not ready.
Oh, so that's next week as opposed to this week?
Hopefully for Man United, we'll have Alderweireld back, hopefully.
I was just looking at this. Spurs have three of the four easiest fixtures of the season are three of our four next games.
That is very good because Eric Lamella is out with, I don't know, Sissoko pox, and Toby is God knows when he'll be back. Yeah, it would be very nice to have our good players back again.
It's also very annoying that it's like, well, we missed Toby for a really important stretch of the season, and then he'll come back for the easiest games of the season.
Well, it is, and you do have to wonder, as frustrated as we've been with how we played the Champions League and some of the other things we've done, like, you do have to wonder, not every team is healthy all the time, but if we had one or two of our key players that we missed during this period, maybe, you know, we're talking about the group stages and this time right now.
Yeah. And I mean, I would also say, like, I this is not to defend our transfer policy, which was poor, but most teams that are on the edge of being good enough to make the Champions League will struggle in the Champions League if key players get injured. Like, that's not that unusual.
It's defensible in some ways and irritating in others, and it's hard to sort of, I don't know, like balance the two, like how much blame should we be apportioning here is difficult.
The part that annoys me is that it was like we clearly recognized that was the problem, was we needed better depth to compete on multiple fronts and to sustain injuries, and the fact that even having recognized that problem, we just solved it so badly.
Well,
that's kind of what I can't.
We did and we didn't.
We fought bad players.
Well, Wanyama is fine. Like, I know you hate him, Ben, but like, he's not nearly as good as Dyer there. But like, in terms of backup defensive midfielder that Tottenham Hotspur can afford, Like, that's fine. I mean,
we went 1-for-3.
Well, what's more irritating is, A, why we did Sissoko at all. I'll give him a pass for not getting Wijnaldum, even if we probably should have. But, you know, that's frustrating. But the fact to me is, like, that we just didn't buy a right-footed center back. It's just inexcusable considering how we're using that rotation this year. It's, you know, if you're going to roll like this, like Vickers better be ready to play real minutes or you ought to go buy somebody.
Also, I think saying 1-for-3 is a little bit harsh on Nkudu because I think he's looked good in the limited time he's got.
Nkudu is probably the most – I mean, he looked – I'm glad you brought him up, Ryan. I thought he was real promising against Chelsea in that – like, I get I know I keep saying this, but every time we get real minutes from him, I understand why Spurs bought him. And
yeah, he definitely does something different. The way he, you know, can mess up a defense's shape, you know, even though his final ball isn't very good, even though he doesn't really know yet, hopefully, what to do with it when he gets there and isn't, like, actually threatening with the ball, just the way he attacks a defense, you know, leads to opportunities happening.
Well, he's a big reason we beat Cesca when we played them because he started screwing them up a little bit. And, I mean, even though he didn't create the actual thing that led to the goal, I mean, you're right. He unsettles the defense. And hopefully with a little more maturity, he can, you know, turn that into goals or assists or whatever. But
at this stage, honestly, like, I would rather we give any minute we would consider giving to Musa Sissoko, give to Nkudu because – and Kudu seems to have the ability to get better, and Musa Sissoko is just as bad as anybody expected.
Frankly, with some of these mediocre teams coming up, I'd like to see Nkudu getting some real, like, starter. Like, if we're going to give Harry Winks a start, we should give him a start.
Yeah. We should definitely start Harry Winks against Hull and see if have him, like, you know, drink Ryan's milkshake. That'd be fun.
Yes.
This would... How insufferable would this podcast be if Harry Winks just owns Ryan Mason and scores a goal off that? I mean, pretty insufferable, I feel like.
On the flip side, how insufferable will our lives be if Ryan Mason, like, scores a hat trick against us?
I hate you so much, Brian. Don't say that. Don't even.
No, or even better, what if Hull score 3 goals and it's Dawson, Livermore, and Mason that score?
No, I think Kapoo would be... You got to work Kapoo in there. Team. Oh, wait. He's on blocker. Ah, it's a yellow team. Same difference.
Well, all aren't very yellow.
Details.
Do you watch soccer, Greg?
No, not really. Not really. I watch football, Ben. I talk about
Forgive me. I also want to just take a moment, because I know there's been a lot of Dembele hate in the comments and on the internet. And I just want to say, get your heads out of your asses.
He was great. This is probably the best game he's had all year. It was really, really good.
You know, like, the fact that he gave the ball away sometimes, like, again, being matched up against the best midfielder in the league and Matic.
Ben, he gave the ball away 5 times, more than anybody else on the field. That makes him awful.
It also requires,
like, when he gave the ball away and, like, I mean, the amount of pressure that Dembele attracted that he only gave the ball away 5 times because mostly he was just running over dudes. Again, one of the best midfielder in the league in Conte and Nemanja Matic, who a couple years ago was the best midfielder in the league. Like, just shut the fuck up.
Well, it required
one giveaway led to a goal. I mean, he's just horrible. We should sell him.
It required 3 of their best players to get the ball off of Moussa Dembele. Like, Dembele is incredible and already a legend, and we should fucking, like, build a statue to him outside the new White Hart Lane. Just, you know, that no one can take a... Like, with a metal ball at his feet so no one can take it off of him. That's... now you're selling my jokes. There we go. All right.
just like... If we're going to be talking about... Like Dembele was... Because the way our system worked in that game was that Victor Wanyama, until we were pushing, really was supposed to sit back and sit deep. It worked pretty well. What that meant was that Musa Dembele often had the responsibility of pressing both Nemanja Matic and N'Golo Kante. And he would be pushing forward into their zone. They'd be trying to take the ball off of him. Of course he lost the ball sometimes. He also He also won the ball 5 times, and he also completed 4 out of 5 dribbles. So, like, he, in those one-on-one matchups that he had in the center of the pitch, he
one won on two.
More than he lost. This, exactly. In those matchups in the center of the pitch, he won more than he lost. Yes, he lost a bunch because he was constantly being involved in those sorts of actions. I think that during the game, I was talking to Graham Macri. He was constantly complaining, like, why is it impossible to tackle Moussa Dembele? This is really annoying. Like, Chelsea fans were getting very frustrated because he was screwing up the way their midfield is supposed to play. He had a great game.
Moussa Dembele always has a great game, except for a lot of this year when he hasn't. But this was a great game. Moussa Dembele's great, and the fact that Spurs fans don't appreciate him more than we do is criminal. Because there's, like, definitely an alternate reality where, like, we sold him to, like, Juventus 2 years ago, and he's, like, killing it there. And, you know, we're all doing that, like, you know, sacrificing our children in parking lots before Spurs games because we sold Moussa Dembele thing. Anyway, yeah.
And then, man, you bought him for $100 million instead of Pogba.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Youth product, Manchester United youth product, Moussa Dembele. Oh, good times. Good times. So, we have, what, Swansea coming up this week?
Yeah, Bobbo.
Bobbo, yes. Yes, which,
Gilfie.
Who's ready to get shut out against Swansea even after their performance last week?
Yeah, they had a bonkers match.
That was really fun, actually.
I mean, I'm super ready for Fernando Llorente to score a hat trick against us.
I think after it's all those it's going to be Gilfie.
No. After all those years of us being linked with Llorente and then never actually managing to sign him.
Do you think him and Daniel Levy will, like, away. Him and Daniel Levy will, like, lock on? There's, like, 20 you got away, Ben. Like, I mean,
Fernando Llorente, he was a big one.
Yeah, so is Luis Suarez.
I mean, even Fernando Llorente now might be an upgrade over Jansen, which is kind of sad.
I mean, Jansen has an upside, so let's not get, like, carried.
He's one for the future. Come on, Brian.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, but Fernando Llorente is one for the present.
I think he's one for the past, actually.
Well, whatever.
Start for Swansea.
Yeah, but he scored 2 last week, so, you know, present.
Didn't everyone on that team score 2 last week?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, Leroy Fer scored 2, so.
I mean, there is no result here other than a win that's acceptable, right? After that defensive display of theirs last week.
We have home to Swansea, then United, then we have home to Hull, then we have home to Burnley. We have to get 9 points.
Yep.
Ugh. And, you know, hopefully a point. It would be very nice to get a point or 3 from United. That what we have to get from that game was more complicated. The other 3, though, you have to win those. You have to win those.
Michael, how are you feeling about playing Manchester United right now? Or, well, in a, you know what I mean.
Yeah, Manchester United they've been good. They've had a weird season where their level of performance has been very stable. They've had a couple of poor games in there. For the most part, they've been a good team that has been struck by bizarre finishing problems and has faced. They have David De Gea in goal, and they're underplaying expected, and teams are beating expected goals pretty badly against them. You know, these are just weird things.
It's 'cause David De Gea sucks. That's why.
Yeah, so I mean, so basically, like there's a sort of, like, Spurs fan, like, oh my God, they're getting back into form. They've really been good all season, and we're go and us beating us get if we do get beaten by them because they're a good team that will be playing at home. It'll be much less because we happened to get them when they were in form, and much more because their form has been good all season, and the results will always come.
And also because Henrik Mkhitaryan will finally start for Man United, and he'll be the catalyst they need to break their bad luck streak.
I mean, he'll have that to play because Fellaini's suspended or something, I'm sure.
Well, it'll be because Marcus Rashford, when he scores a low percentage chance at the end of the game, and Michael is just really happy, and his mentions on Twitter are just lovely things to read.
Man, my Rashford mentions have dried up in the last month, though. It's weird. Well,
you've kind of stopped fucking that chicken a little bit. Like, I wonder why. All right, so yeah, we have a game against Swansea. We should probably win it. How are we feeling about Bob Bradley? Since we're all Americans, I feel like we're duty-bound to defend our former U.S. Men's Ninja Turtles manager. I don't know. I mean, do we think he's going to last the season?
I think he should. I mean, unless, like, he's just an absolute disaster, you know. But, you know, the signs are there. This is a good, dumb win. You know, I don't know that Swansea are going to do better. You know, they've had a ton of managerial turnover, and it hasn't worked out great for them. So, yeah, stick for a minute and see if it works.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly coming to a situation where his team is hamstrung by having really shitty defenders. And I would assume that in January they're going to try to buy at least one non-shitty defender, but we're going to face them before that happens. So we should score goals.
It's interesting looking at Swansea now and how, you know, they're such a hot mess. And I guess it really fell apart for them last year. But all you heard about them when they came up through the league in their first couple of years in the league is like, oh, what a consistent structure they had, so they can turn over managers without really missing a step because they keep the same style and the same development and just all these things. And, you know, now it's like, you know, you just sort of wonder how the hell this happened to them. And I don't know. Maybe people were getting a little carried away with how good their development structure was, but
I don't know. It turns out maybe selling your club captain and best defender, you know, a week before the season starts is not a good idea.
Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, they've bled a lot of talent and had very bad managers who are not capable of replacing them.
Yeah, I mean, so they sold IU for a lot. They have money to burn, but I just don't know. I don't know if they spent it this summer. Like, I don't really know what their transfer business was. Like, they signed who? I mean, Lieber Fair and Fernando Llorente and
Borja Bastón for like $17 million, and he's barely playing.
So I mean, you know, like they got a lot of money for Williams, they got a lot of money for IU. There's money there. They could.
Right. They got money from Boney a couple years ago.
Yeah, they could conceivably find a defender and another midfielder and put together something that works, but I think Bob Bradley will just buy like Omar Gonzalez or something.
And Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
Of course. Hearing another fan base complain about nepotism with Michael Bradley would be kind of entertaining to watch. I'm not going to lie. Well, yeah, so we'll play Swansea this weekend, and there's really no excuse for beating them, which doesn't make me feel very good about the game, but here's hoping. Let's move on, unless, Ben, do you want to beat the Moussa horse anymore before we hit some questions?
No, he's just bad. Let's do some questions.
Okay. Good to know.
Is the first question about Moses Sissoko?
Oh man, I wish. Well, sort of. Why can't we have nice things from I did the Ziggy on Twitter. Why can't we have nice things, Ben?
Because we bought Moses Sissoko.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. This strikes me as a bit of a Brian, I want to come to you with some historical perspective on this. Someone asked, this is Taylor James on Twitter. He wants to know, where does the last week rank in Tottenham low points? He felt worse after the 2-2 last season, and then he felt worse after the Newcastle game last year and the Chelsea game. I don't know. I feel like this game, like last week, doesn't even really rank in like all-time shitty Spurs weeks.
I mean, no, it's not even close. I mean, there's 2 points from 7 games, like that whole
2 points
stretch.
From 8. Come on, don't
8 games.
Don't let it die, Brian. Don't let.
I'm sorry. I was trying to give Wande a little more credit. you know, there's that. There's the weird end to the Martin Yole tenure, with us basically tapping up Wande. There's so much
lasagna.
Weird. Yeah, that one was a bad one. There's, you know, Chelsea winning the Champions League.
There's a million. There's the 5-2s to Arsenal. There's the ABB losses to City and Liverpool.
There's the entirety of the Tim Sherwood era.
So many bad days in Spurs history. This wasn't even the worst day of this season.
Yeah, Tim Sherwood was our manager.
It wasn't even the worst
months.
Day of this week.
Well, yeah, it ranks pretty low. They're
much worse than the Chelsea loss in my book.
Yes. Our next question comes from Haley Bachrock, who wants to know, if we should just put Toby in the starting 11 injured so we can stand still and tell everyone else what to do. I think this is a – I mean, I would rather do it than anything else I've seen us do. Like, I mean, Michael, do you think this is a viable strategy, statistically speaking?
That 100% would have prevented the second Chelsea goal. It might have had other downsides. I don't want to endorse the idea of having a defender whose job is to be a coach, but it really actually would have prevented the second Chelsea goal.
I mean, I'm pretty sure this is literally what Michael Dawson did for several years. So, I mean, it could have been worse. I don't know. She also asked, I think this is an important question, we need to help our Spurs fans out, who are our American Spurs fan friends who are going to England. She wants to know, because she's going to be at the Swansea game this weekend, whose kit should she get? And does this definitely mean we're going to lose 0-10? Ben, you want to take the second one first?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Thank you, Haley, for costing us a much-needed 3 points.
Yeah, good work.
It's nice, nice to know who to blame in advance.
Exactly. Well, yeah. That's really the important thing about being a supporter. Like, just finding the right people to blame.
Right. We can't blame Moses Sissoko every week when he's not even in the 18.
I mean, we can.
Ben, I mean, you have, so.
I have and I will. I mean. But now I'll blame Haley.
Now, Haley's made the tactical decision to go to this game.
So. That's right.
So what kit should she get, Ben?
Moses Sissoko.
Oh, okay. She's just own it.
Just so I can still blame Sissoko by proxy.
Okay. All right. Good call. Brian, what kit should she get?
I think if she wants to prevent the 0-10 result, she has to get a Gylfi Sigurdsson kit.
Bold move, Cotton. Bold move. Michael, what kind of kit should she get?
Musa Dembele kit. We need all Spurs fans in Musa Dembele kits. Solidarity.
I feel like if she's going to own the failure, just utter failure occurring at White Hart Lane, she should get a Lewis Holtby kit. I think that's the only way to go here. And then
for my birthday, my brother told me he was going to buy me a Spurs kit. And he asked me who I wanted on it. And I said Moussa Dembele, and he flat out refused, as that not being like a cool enough person to have my jersey.
He is the coolest. Is there anyone cooler on Spurs than Dembele?
No, there isn't.
Not even close.
Like, I'm not even joking. Like, he is actually the coolest guy on Spurs. Like,
I mean, I'm getting a Spurs kit for Christmas as well, and I had the big debate with my friends about what player to get. I couldn't decide if it was down to either Dembele, Lamella, or Harry Kane, and I eventually went with Kane. But I'm really kind of regretting the decision now.
Get a Dembele kit. I think we're all in agreement here.
It's choice. I mean, that's just so obvious. Like, if you'd gotten a Harry Kane kit 3 years ago, you know, then I'd have mad respect.
Right. But 3 years ago, I said he was going to be an English version of Stephen Fletcher. So
there's still time for that to happen, Brian.
There is.
The dream is still alive.
I think you already scored Stephen Fletcher's entire career. So.
Hey, dreams still come
true. He might never score again. You don't know, Ben.
It's true.
Finally,
now I know who to blame for that.
Sorry, guys.
Finally, picking up the rear as befits this Twitter account, we have Reno Wallabout, who wants to know what secret revenge does Tom Carroll have planned for Harry Winks for stealing his spot in the squad? Ben?
Tom Carroll is incapable of revenge. He will bake him a lovely cake with a nice message on it and wish him well.
You don't think he's going to get Winks tattooed on his knuckles and just work out a lot?
I mean, he probably already has a Harry Winks tattoo just out of sheer love for his
just
best friend.
Just out of love. Just out of love. It is hedonistic lifestyle. He can't hold himself back.
Yeah, most people, you know, you have like the mom in a heart. He has a Winks in a heart. That was his first tattoo.
His first tattoo. Okay, good to know. Good to know. Brian, what secret revenge does Tom Carroll have planned for Harry Winks for stealing his spot?
Well, I mean, One Direction's already broken up, so I'm not sure how Tom Carroll plans to demoralize Harry Winks any further. I guess what would be good is if Tom Carroll could get Justin Bieber to, like, come out as being like anti Harry Winks. I don't know how he would do that. If he could egg Harry Winks' car, if he has a car, I don't know. Maybe Harry Winks isn't old enough to drive. I don't know. But yeah, we need something like that. We need one of these people that Harry Winks idolizes to just come out and be and just talk about how rubbish he is and what a horrible human being he is. Because Tom Carroll, like Ben said, is too nice a guy to actually do that himself. He's going to use a proxy.
He's going to do a Scott Tenorman from South Park where he makes him eat his parents and then
I thought you instead said he was of Radiohead, love, Ben.
One Direction. No, this is just
stick to your stories, Ben.
We don't have our Harry Winks bits yet.
This podcast has very, very important continuity, and it's very important that we stick to that continuity.
Speaking of, what you should do is secretly tape Harry Winks talking about his favorite movies and TV shows and why he likes them, like his love of Friends, the best TV show ever, and White Girls, which is a circle fingers emoji, and then play those for Eric Dyer and get Eric Dyer really, really angry to like go rant at him for an hour about how those don't challenge our preconceptions of what art should be.
What do you think? What TV show do you think Harry Winks would get the most mad about his teammates not liking?
Big Bang Theory.
Oof! Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, he is basic as fuck.
The guy's funny. There's so much laughter during the show, and you're like, no.
Yeah, I don't think he understands the concept of a laugh track.
No, he absolutely does not.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably just sitting there in the locker room talking about how the newest Call of Duty is, like, better than any movie he's ever seen, and Eric Dyer is just across the locker room, like, slowly, you know, ripping some, like, you know, shirt that Dele Alli gave him into little shreds as he goes insane. It's a very interesting dynamic in this team. Anyway, on that note, yeah, sorry.
It's gotten worse the further apart Eric Dyer and Dele Alli have gotten on the pitch.
You're right. That is concerning both for Tottenham Hotspur and our Tumblr.
Yep.
Eric Dyer for striker.
Eric Dyer for striker. Or we could play them in a unique midfield formation where Dele Alli rides Eric Dyer's shoulders.
Sort of a master blaster sort of thing.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it's the ideal way to go.
Like a whole, like, Mecha Shiva type deal. It'd be great. I think it would really work out well for Spurs. That's how you need to fix it, Mauricio. Make it happen. All right. On that note, for Ben Day. Oh, wait. No, I got to do the things. Ben, where can people find you on the internets?
Oh, my God. at Gary Rupier on Twitter.
Oh, you're such a drag tonight, Ben. Brian, where can people find you online?
You always ask me first, and I never know if we're giving an honest answer or if we're doing stick.
You could be a leader. You could be a captain like Hugo and set the tone. But no, you're just gonna be a bitch about it and complain.
He's a sidekick. What do you want from it?
A coup. It sounds like.
I mean, God, a sidekick can't make decisions like that. Come on.
Good point. That's a good point. Brian, where can people find you on?
Well, I guess since we're not doing bits, you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Brett Rainbow.
That's more like it. Michael Cayley, where can people find you on Twitter?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Brian Ashlock.
Okay,
whatever his Twitter is.
That's what I like to hear.
You don't even follow us on Twitter, do you? You fucking big shot.
Of course I do. I just don't know how many people
handle it. Now, for Brett Rainbow, and for Brett Rainbow, I'm Skipjack. Thanks for joining us.